These readings I find are quite something on this day. I didn't choose them for this day. They are the ones that were indicated for this day. And as often happens, there's sort of a magic in the lectionary and some sort of serendipitous providential something that brings the right things together in the right way. I don't know what your reason or reasons may be for being here. For some people, this season is incredibly lonely and heavy. For some people, it's really difficult in the first year without someone, or it's difficult every year because someone died at Christmas time, or it's difficult every year because Christmas has never been the same since that person left, even if they left 50 years ago. So I've been thinking a lot about why we don't have space in our regular celebrations of Christmas to do what we're primarily here to do tonight, which is to gather at God's table and encounter the real presence of Christ and the sharing of the bread and the wine, and make a space to say, some parts of this season honestly just suck. It's just hard. And sometimes it's because it's too busy, sometimes because the expectation is that we will be so happy. I myself find that I am delighted. I love Advent so much, and so I'm delighted in this season, and I also always terribly miss my parents. We had the best Christmases at our house, and they've both been gone a while now, and I still, yesterday when I went to the grocery store, I had my list. But you know what I also bought? 4 red, ruby red grapefruits. Because we always had grapefruit and oranges. Indian River citrus. Yeah, we always did it as a fundraiser at my school. And so we always had that. And I used to sit on the hearth. And do you know those little Tupperware citrus peelers? Yeah, my mom had a couple of those. So I'd sit with my grapefruit. And it was as happy as I could be, sitting on the fireplace that my dad made in front of a warm fire and eating grapefruit. And sometimes he would sit on the other side of the hearth with me. So things like that. And there's a liberty in that, that if you can't have things like they were, you can enjoy the memories, and sometimes they're sad. And you can also decide which parts to keep, kind of like making your own quilt. I come from a family of quilters. I myself am not a quilter, but we have lots of quilts made from scraps of people's clothes. And so, you know, you inherit this whole thing, and parts of it might get moth-eaten, or you might just hate that particular color. And so you quilt it anew, and you piece it together, and you keep what works and what you want to carry forward, and you cut out the rest, and it can just go away. Just let it go. If it doesn't serve, if it doesn't add to the beauty of your quilt. So part of what we have going on as a culture is we don't have a space for the rituals of mourning anymore. Black is fashionable. I myself wear it pretty much every day, but it kind of comes with the gig. And there is the little black dress, there's a black tie affair and like that, but a lot of people wear black primarily to funerals, and even if they just lost their soulmate, they don't wear black anymore, or they maybe don't even wear black to the funeral. I remember my mom saying, I am happy today celebrating your father's life, and so she wore this beautiful teal suit. Well, this is my mama. I wasn't going to tell her any different. But just this week, I was reading about Queen Victoria, and you probably know this. She and Prince Albert had a great love affair. She was the longest reigning British monarch until her granddaughter, Elizabeth II, beat her record by some years. But Victoria and Albert married a long time, and when he died, she lived another 4 decades. and she wore mourning dress the rest of her life. And it wasn't like she never had a good time. She had, you know the story about Mr. Brown? They were good friends, and she went riding on the ponies that she loved, and she entertained people from around the world, and she seems like she kind of enjoyed her life, but she always wore the black of mourning. And this piece I was reading this week is by a psychologist from Austria who says the reason people did that was to remind themselves that someone was gone, not so that they would feel bad all the time, but because they were constantly or regularly aware of that person's absence, and to draw attention to the fact that they remembered the person was gone and they marked it by wearing mourning clothes, help them make space in their daily life for the ongoing presence of that person. And now so often we get the message like, well, I'm very sorry for your loss, and you'll be fine soon enough. Well, you might not be fine ever again. Maybe not ever again. You certainly won't be the same ever again. And we have to integrate our losses, and they become part of our life. Some people say grief is the feeling that we have over the loss, and mourning is the things that we do to honor the loss or to sort of integrate it into our lives. When I was chaplaining at the Atlanta airport, I accompanied the remains of many, many, many service members. And some of them had been dead for a very long time, and their remains had been excavated and identified, and because of the advances in DNA technology, and they were being sent home. So sometimes I was accompanying remains from World War I, and pretty often from World War II. And there was often this thing of, well, at least the family, whoever survives, you know, sometimes it was a baby sister or brother who'd just been a tiny child when the soldier was killed or the Marine died. And sometimes there wouldn't be anybody of their generation left. But there was always this talk of, this is good because it will bring closure to this family. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't believe in closure. That isn't, I mean, it's nice to know where they are and where their remains can be laid to rest, but I think our grief continues and it takes different forms. When my mom died, Becky, my spouse, found this illustration that showed that grief in a box like this, and there was a big red balloon that was just pushing at the edges of the box. And then over time, the balloon got smaller. So it wasn't quite as prominent, but it never went away. And that's one way I've thought about grief. Like, it kind of gets integrated into the rest of me and the rest of my life. I'll tell you what else I bought at the grocery store. This was on my list. I needed some flour, and I needed some aluminum pie pans, because one of the ways I'm going to hold space for my mom and for my dad, I'm going to eat grapefruit with my dad, and I'm going to make my mom's cranberry pies. I don't make everything that she made, and she just loved cooking. I don't love cooking in that way, but the stuff that I do, I usually feel like I'm being directed by her. So that's kind of what's going on there. So I'm gonna bake some of those pies, and some of you may get to share some of them if I don't eat them all myself. Becky says I have to save her one. So I don't wanna go on too long, but I do wanna just say, if you're not feeling great, it really is okay. And if you're feeling forlorn and excited at the same time, that's okay too. However we feel is okay. And I'm drawn to, again, this evening, this line from the reading in Isaiah. God created the heavens, formed the earth and made it, did not create it a chaos, that formed it to be inhabited. And so we inhabited this world with one another. And when people whom we love and see no longer pass on, not away, we're still connected to them and with them. And they, as we say in the burial office, our life has changed, not ended. Their life has changed, not ended. And so part of what we're figuring out is, what does our life look like without some of those? And you may not be here because of any person whom you have lost, but some dimension of your life or career or an experience that's difficult to reconcile in this season. And so we hold space for all of those losses and all those things that bring heaviness as well. It would be nice if Jesus could come right along and touch the bier and raise somebody we love immediately back to life. But our faith is that that person's life continues in a way that we can't see but can be aware of. And I often in that story think about the young men carrying the bier. What about the pallbearers? Can you imagine? So tonight, think about how we might be all pallbearers this evening. And whatever any of us is carrying, the rest of us gathered here, and those we love but see no longer, are helping us carry whatever the weighty thing is that's resting upon that bier in this season. There is more life. There's more love. Christmas is coming, and Advent is still here. When we come in a few moments to the prayers of the people, I invite you to get as many candles as you want. I wasn't expecting that many people. I was just expecting that you might have a lot of things you want to mark. And so for every person you want to remember, or for every difficulty that you want to mark and put down, I invite you to light candles off the Advent wreath, and then at the indicated time, you can come and put them all here in the sand. So they might be candles of remembrance, they might be candles of acceptance or surrender, whatever you need to do, and however long it takes, that will be how we hold space with one another and how we bear the bier this evening. Amen.
Amen.